You're listening to the Mom Inspired Show, episode 25 with Jessica Turner. Welcome to the Mom Inspired Show. I'm your host, Amber Sandberg, and this show is created to inspire, encourage, and add a little extra fun to your day. This week, we have Jessica Turner on the show, and she is the blogger of Mom Creative and also the author of The Fringe Hour. We talk about her working full-time, writing her blog, and being a mom to three young kids. We also chat about her throwing kids' parties and what it's like to ask for help when you need it, and her sharing with us her journey of having abdominal surgery and a breast reduction and what the recovery was like. I hope that you guys walk away from the show realizing that it is okay to ask for help and don't let your pride get in the way, because if you gain anything from this episode, you will realize that sometimes you need that extra help, especially during different seasons of your life, and that it's okay. Let's go to the show. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So I love to start off every show with an icebreaker, and I love to travel, and so I love asking people where their favorite destinations are. So what is your favorite vacation spot that you have gone to and why? And this can be with or without kids.
My favorite vacation spot is always anything beach. So as long as there's sand and water, I'm happy. My husband has traveled all over the world and he has experienced much more than I have. So for me, it's just a beach. I long to go to Europe and Italy and lots of places over there. But for what I have experienced, I will say the beach.
Okay. And is there a beach that you particularly really love to go to?
You know, I'm pretty much happy at any beach. I'm not picky about it.
You don't discriminate. Yeah.
No.
That's awesome. Well, let's get into the interview. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So I live in Nashville. I'm married. My husband, Matthew, and I have been married for 13 years. We have three kids. Our son, Elias, is 8. Adeline is 5 and Ezra is 2. I work full-time outside the home doing content strategy and marketing for a large healthcare company. And then I also run a popular lifestyle blog called The Mom Creative. And I've been doing that for 10 years. And through The Mom Creative, I've had so many fun opportunities working with brands. And I actually published my first book in 2015 called The Fringe Hours, Making Time for You. And it's a book for women about encouraging them to make time for themselves and practice self-care. And through that, I've had a lot of opportunities to speak at conferences and events for both men and women all over the country. So life is very busy.
Yeah. So when I met you probably 8 or 9 years ago, you did have your blog already at that point, right?
Yeah, I certainly did.
Okay.
I think it was probably just getting started.
It was just getting started
at that point. Yeah. Cause it's been 10 years.
Okay. Yeah. And so for the listeners, I met Jessica through our friend Angie Smith. And what I really remember about you is we would be doing these craft projects that you would kind of put together and order all the supplies. And I still have some of those and I still love them today. And I'm like, you know, I miss those times. Those were so great for you just to walk us through how to do it. And, you know, and then you walk away with these cute little usually photo projects. And so I definitely appreciate that. And at the time, I don't even think I realized you had a blog. So it really has come so far since then, you know?
Yeah, it's been remarkable. That's so neat that you still have those projects.
That oh, I do.
Definitely a fun time. Pre-kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. You have 3 kids. I have 2 kids now. So a lot has changed. But I wanted to ask you, did you ever think you'd be running your own brand and still working full time with another company?
You know, I didn't. Obviously, I don't think any of us did 10 years ago when blogs were just getting off the ground. I just started blogging because other scrapbookers were blogging and I was really involved in the scrapbooking community at the time. And so I wanted a place to share my projects. And my husband and I live about 12 hours from family. And so thought that it would be a great place to stay connected with them. But no, certainly didn't expect it to become its own lifestyle brand and really to become a brand myself in some ways, which is even strange for me to say now.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, have you had to figure out how to work on the blog, you know, while working full time? Do you have like set hours that you spend just on the blog itself?
I don't have set hours, although I do have some common habits. So I wake up early in the morning, well before I need to be at work, well before my children are awake, and I often will spend a period of time writing then. I also usually take a few hours on the weekend to finish up any projects, whether that is a deadline for a sponsor post or it's some photography that needs to happen. Usually I'll take a few hours on a Saturday or Sunday to get that work done. I am always happy when I get the week's content done ahead of time.
Yes.
I must say that with three kids, that doesn't happen as often as it used to, even with one or two. But I try to work ahead, and certainly my editorial calendar at least has drafts in there for a few weeks ahead of when I'm actually publishing. So that helps keep me organized when I have just bits of time here and there that I can be writing or working on a project.
Sure. And, you know, that leads me into you writing your book. And, you know, and I'm just thinking, writing a book is such a big deal with like the time that it takes. So I wanted to go into your book called The French Hour. And what made you decide to write this book?
You know, so many women were asking me, how do you do it all? How do you do it all? And really, they weren't asking me, how do you find time for laundry? How do you work? How do you mother? They really wanted to know how I was finding time for those fun projects, those passion projects, the reading and the crafting and the parties that I was planning and those types of things. And the answer was the fringe hours, those pockets of time that often go underused or wasted altogether. I was using those for the things that I loved, and I was comfortable with that. And so that lifestyle was something that I realized would be something that other women needed to hear, that they needed to be equipped in. And so I came up with the idea for the book and signed with an agent, and she shopped the book around and was fortunate to have a lot of publishers interested in it, and signed with a publisher. And then the Fringe Hours, Making Time for You, released in February of 2015, so just over 2 years ago. And then the gift book, the kind of companion book of the Fringe Hours, which is called My Fringe Hours, it's a hardback, full color book, that released in December, so of 2015. So it was a wild year. I had my son Ezra 6 weeks before the first book came out, and so I like to joke that I birthed twice in 6 weeks by having the baby and then the book.
Yeah, and I thought about that too. With you had him, and then the book came out, and then you had to travel, right, to kind of, you know, promote the book. And I was going to ask you, what did you learn about traveling with a newborn? Like, do you have any tips for moms that are trying to do that and trying to, you know, keep their life going still, but they just had a baby, and you know, how do you do that going through the airports and, you know, staying in hotels? So do you have any tips for that?
Sure. So traveling with Ezra, my first trip with him was at 5 weeks. And I would say that's about the time I traveled with each of my children, because our family lives out of town. We flew to take the babies home so everyone could see them at about that time. And, you know, flying with a newborn is pretty easy because all they do is eat, sleep, and poop. So,
right.
You know, I like to wear my babies. I find that that is easier in an airport. It also keeps people from touching your baby. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times if your baby's in the stroller or kind of out where people can touch them, they will
sure.
touch them. And so to keep germs at a minimum, I think it's a good practice to wear your babies. Also, having your stroller allows you to put the diaper bag in there and your purse and those types of things and keep you pretty hands-free. So I like to have a stroller with me when I'm going through an airport. I know some people don't, but I find that that frees me up. Or if I need to go to the bathroom, I can put the baby in the stroller really easily.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, you know, just giving yourself plenty of time and being sure to have extras in the diaper bag in case there are delays. And certainly when you're traveling with a little one, having, whether it's formula or if you're nursing, you know, having lots of milk certainly makes things easier as well.
Yeah. Now, and how did he do staying in the hotel? Did you have like just a pack and play, or what did you have him sleeping in?
Gosh, I hardly remember. I think at that time I used the car seat, instead of a pack and play. All of my kids were pretty reflexy when they were real little.
Yeah.
And so, I like to have them sleeping kind of upright. And so that worked just fine. But yeah, you can usually get a pack and play from a hotel. There was one situation where I actually had a bouncy seat shipped from Amazon Prime to the hotel because I knew that I was going to need that because my baby liked a bouncy seat so much. So I paid the $30 to have that delivered to the hotel, and the hotel handyman like helped me put it together.
That's great.
I had that bouncy seat there, and then I just left it there because I couldn't obviously take it back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I was going to ask you, what do you feel like is your biggest obstacle when trying to do all that you do for your brand and also work full time and, you know, being a mom to three kids?
I think time is always going to be the biggest obstacle, you know, especially with having a full-time job that requires 40 hours and that isn't going to change. And then kids have different needs. And so really the thing that has to be flexible is my other work, is my blog, The Mom Creative, my writing, speaking, that sort of thing. And so I think it's being comfortable with where I'm at and knowing that I can't compare myself to bloggers who that is their full-time gig, because blogging is not my full-time gig. And being comfortable with kind of where I am is something that I've had to learn over the years.
Yeah. And, you know, I was going to ask you, like, so how do you have any systems that you found that really work well for your family in regards to picking up the house and cooking meals and, you know, just doing all those house projects that kind of just have to be done? And, you know, you want to get them all done, but you can't get them done as soon as you'd like, because, you know, you have kids and all this stuff going on. Have you found a system at all that you feel like, you know what, this has really helped us to kind of stay sane?
Oh, I wish. No, you know, there's certainly, I think there are systems that you can put in place. And I think the more systems you put in place, the easier it is. I talk about that a lot. I have an online course called Stretch Too Thin. And it's a course for working moms. The domain is stretchtoothincourse.com. And it's going to be opening again soon. But in that course, I talk about how having systems in place can make things easier when you feel like things are spinning out of control. So for instance, we have some baskets at our door that my kids put their shoes in. Now, sometimes they put the shoes right outside the baskets, right? Like they don't actually get them in the basket, but, you know, having those types of systems where it can be really easy to do pickup, I think makes a big difference. We have hooks for the backpacks and, you know, those types of things. You know, I think that it's also important to teach your kids responsibility and have them involved. So for our family, again, my children are pretty little, but we have a wipe off little chart that I bought at the dollar store. And it has on it the list of everything that they need to do every morning, everything from get dressed to brush teeth to empty the dishwasher, make lunches. And then they check those things off as they complete them. And that has drastically reduced the amount of times I'm having to say, did you do this? Did you do this? That they can look at that chart and they can accomplish it themselves. So I think that's important, giving them responsibility and then helping equip them with what they need to get it done. I'm also a big fan of Swiffer, and we have Swiffers that, you know, the kids can clean the floor, that I don't have to do that. I think being comfortable with good enough is good enough, you know, that there isn't a home television show coming in to film at your house to see, you know, how perfect it is, right?
Right.
So I'm comfortable with that. We're kind of in a season of chaos, and that's okay with me. So I think being comfortable with that, letting go a little bit is important. And then, you know what, having help. I have a cleaning service that comes in to my home every other week, and they clean the bathrooms and change the sheets and do the vacuuming and clean the ceiling fan and wipe down the refrigerator and all of those types of things, and really kind of help bring us to normal.
Yeah.
We joke that we have to clean for the cleaning lady, right? And get everything off the floor and get it ready. But that really does help to have, to know that they're coming and to kind of get everything ready for them. We are right now, I mean, literally she's come one time testing having a housekeeper instead of a biweekly cleaning service. I was shocked that the cost is pretty comparable per week. But having somebody come in for like 10 hours a week to do laundry and clean up and, you know, some of those chores to keep the house running, to see if that maybe would work better for our family in this season than having somebody come every 2 weeks to having somebody come twice a week, every week. So I can't report on if that is successful or not yet, but I'm excited about that. It certainly was great this weekend, you know, only having 3 baskets of laundry instead of 7 baskets of laundry to do from having her come one day last week. So
exactly.
We'll see, but I think whatever that looks like for you, I think I'm a huge advocate for getting help. And recognizing that we can't do it all, particularly if you're an entrepreneur or have a side hustle, whether that is a business like selling oils or makeup or Pampered Chef or something like that, or it's a blog or a writer, whatever it is. When you're doing that on top of working, on top of mothering, you can't do it all yourself.
Yeah. You know, so I was going to ask you, how did you find the person that came in to do the 10 hours? Did you go to like care.com or something like that? Or?
Yeah, that's exactly how I did it. I went on care.com and had some applications and interviewed somebody. And I was encouraged to do it from a friend who's a fellow entrepreneur. She gave me a really good job description to use as kind of a template. And I used that and reached out to people and got somebody that I think is going to be a good fit for our family, but we'll see. And you know what? We're doing it as a 1 month trial because she has a long commute and, you know, our family's needs might not be a good fit for what she's looking to do in her career, or she might not be a great fit for what we're looking for. We might find that, you know, twice a week isn't the right amount and we'd rather do the cleaning service and a laundry service or something else. So we're just testing it out right now. My husband also works from home. So it also is a challenge for him having somebody come in well, because that's disruptive to his schedule. So we're testing it for a month and we'll see if it's a good fit or not.
Now, what kind of wording would you say is good to look for somebody like this so that you're not just looking for, say, a house cleaner or something?
Sure. I think like a housekeeper is a pretty common description. And then I think it's just being thorough in what you're looking for them to do, that you're looking for them to do
laundry,
cleaning,
or whatever.
Laundry. Yeah, exactly. And being specific in what those things are. I noticed in other people's descriptions, a lot of times mailing packages and doing returns was part of it, or meal prep, you know, so really you're kind of looking for an Alice, if you will.
Yeah. Now, are you using this person to do help you with the meals and stuff? Or are you still just doing the meals?
Like I said, she's only come once. Mm. So, she did laundry the entire time that she came. So I don't think that I will do meal prep. I was just saying in terms of what I've seen other descriptions, because my husband works from home and he loves to cook, he handles our meals. So I don't think that's something that generally speaking that I would ask of her to do.
Well, and I was going to go back to your whiteboard with the kids and the chores. And so so you have the whiteboard, and are you just writing the kids' names and then the chores that you feel that fit their age group? Is that how you figure that out?
Yeah, so it's really specific for their morning tasks because I felt like I was constantly saying the same thing every day. Did you brush your teeth? Did you wet your hair down? Did you put your shoes on? And so it is just their morning tasks. That isn't an exhaustive chore list. And then so it lists all of their tasks on the left-hand side of the chart, and then their names are at the top. So there's a column for Elias and a column for Adeline, and then it's broken out by day. So Monday through Friday is on there for them.
Okay. And then how did you figure out? Because I feel like a lot of people may not be having their kids do chores because, you know, you think, oh, they're too young. But I'm thinking, how did you figure out like what would be a good, you know, age appropriate chore for each child? Did you read something or did you just kind of do trial and error?
Yeah, I think it was just trial and error. It was more our house is a hot mess. Surely at 5 and 8, you can pick up your toys.
Yep.
We start our kids early with doing dishwasher, cleaning the floors, you know, doing those types of things. My husband lived out in the country and he had chickens as a kid and a big garden. And so he was doing a lot of chores really young. And so I think some of it has just even been his influence in terms of what the expectations were growing up.
Yeah. And so what do you have your 2-year-old doing? Is he 2? He just turned 2, right?
Yeah, he's not doing anything.
Okay, he's not doing anything. So do you usually wait till like they're 3 to probably start doing something?
You know, Amber, I don't know.
Okay.
it just sort of like naturally happens. I mean, my 2-year-old, he puts his diaper in the trash.
I think
that it is slow. He knows that his shoes go in those shoe baskets that I mentioned.
Yes.
So I think that it certainly is starting young. You know, we sing the cleanup song those types of things. He's in daycare, and so they clean up toys at daycare and that sort of thing. So I think that it's just a gradual thing that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and like my daughter Adeline is 5 and she's in kindergarten. And so we do sometimes say, you know, Elias, when you were in kindergarten, you weren't doing this yet. So you can't have the same expectations. So what we normally see more is that our kids have the expectations that everyone's going to do the same things equal, you know.
Yes.
So then we do try to say, no, that they weren't doing that at that age, or you weren't doing that at that age, or they're too little for that, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I think I need to get my oldest, who will be 6 in April, to start doing the dishwasher stuff more, because I feel like we kind of are lax on that. And then, you know, and then it's not consistent. So I definitely think she's old enough to do that. And my youngest is going to turn 3. So I need to figure out what's good for her to do consistently. So that's what I was asking. But
yeah, I wish I had.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I know. Sometimes that just kind of, it just comes about and then you don't really know when that actually started happening. But
I do know that with the dishwasher, it started with the silverware where you would just empty the silverware. And still, I generally take out all the glassware. And so really, Elias, who is 8, he is doing like mostly the cups and the Tupperware and, you know, the big bowls or those types of things. So I'll usually get it started for him. You know, the coffee's going and I'll pull out all the plates because the dishwasher is clean in theory every morning, you know? And so then that is part of his routine is to get the rest of it put away. And honestly, he still doesn't put the cups away and stuff. They're all sitting on the counter. So it's not like it's making a whole lot less work for me, but it's more the practice of doing it.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree. I do think that's great for them to get to start doing at an earlier age. And so I wanted to jump into some of the listeners may not know this about you, but you're really great at throwing parties and you're super creative, kind of like what we talked about before when you were teaching us those craft projects. But do you have any tips for moms that don't really feel like it's their strength, but they really want to do something special on some level?
You know, I think you need to do what is right for you. Special doesn't have a clear definition. So what's special in your family might be that you write your child a really beautiful letter every year and you read that to them and then you tuck it away in a box and you give them that box of 21 letters on their 21st birthday. Or it might be that you buy them a book every year and you write a special message for their birthday in that book. And that becomes the special thing that you do. Or they, when I was little, every year on our birthday, we didn't have to make our bed. That was the only day of the year we didn't have to make our bed.
I love it.
And so I remember being so excited that my dad was going to make my bed. And so I don't think that special means elaborate Pinterest party. Just because that is something that is special in my family is having a big party and mommy going all out on the planning and the decorations and all the things, that's because it brings me joy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because it's what I think is right to do for a child's birthday.
Gotcha. Now, if some people are creative and, you know, and they do have that and it does make them happy, do you have any tips to not be so stressed out, even if they do really enjoy it? Have you kind of figured out a way to not feel crazy by the time the party comes, or are you still feeling crazy?
You know, I'm feeling crazy, but I don't think I'm feeling crazy necessarily for the same reasons other people are. My parties, as much as I love throwing them, they also are part of my business, right? I get a lot of traffic on my blog for my parties. And so I'm more stressed about making sure that I get all the photos shot. And that I'm going to be able to use them. So, for instance, this past summer, my daughter had a Finding Dory party. And the Finding Dory movie had just come out. And I was so excited about throwing her this party and thought that it would do really well on Pinterest and all of those things. She was really excited about the movie. And I decided to invest way more than I normally would on a cake because I wanted to have a really great Finding Dory cake. There weren't a lot of Finding Dory cakes out there yet, right? Because the movie had just come out.
Right.
So I paid all this money to have this cake made, and I forgot to take pictures of just the cake.
Oh, man.
And obviously, that is something that you cannot recreate afterward.
No.
You know, and so it's more like stress like that for me, just to make sure that I get everything, you know, that everything is shot. So we've gotten to where we're shooting with 2 cameras and I make a list beforehand of, you know, what I want to get and those types of things. But I'm not really stressed during the party. I really am experiencing it with everybody and really enjoying getting to show other people, you know, hospitality and seeing them having fun is really a blessing to me. I love that. And so I really try to enjoy the party when it's happening. But I do have that in the back of my mind of making sure that I'm capturing the games being played and those types of things that are harder for me to recreate afterward.
Yeah, no, and that totally makes sense. And so, but that is really good that you're able to actually enjoy in the present time. Cause I do feel like a lot of people lose that and cause they're just so stressed. And so, I think too, like what you said, even if they don't have a blog or, you know, they're not trying to capture it in that way, to write a list of the things that you want to have ahead of time so that you can kind of just jot down so it doesn't have to be all in your head. And you're trying to remember that during the party. But I wanted to ask you, I know that you, I think I saw on your blog, you know, when you moved into your home that you're in, that you had projects and stuff like that to work on in your house. Have you found ways to figure out like how to break off certain chunks of time to do these projects? Because I feel like this is something that people are like, how in the world are people ever working on their house, especially with kids? Have you guys had any luck with trying to figure that out at all?
No, honestly, it's a source of,
I'm glad you answered that honestly.
Yeah. So we moved into our house, it'll be 4 years, I think, in the fall, and it was 80s fabulous with popcorn ceiling and Mallard duck wallpaper and gold fixtures and not the gold fixtures that are trendy, you know,
yeah, like
the
80s I know what you mean. Yep. Fixtures. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, one of the first projects that I set out to do was to remodel two of the three bathrooms, a full bath and a half bath. And both of those bathrooms were like 90% remodeled. Mm. And the last 10%, we didn't have the budget to do. I said we would do it ourselves. And that was scraping the popcorn ceiling. And then in both bathrooms, scraping the ceiling. And then in the other bathroom, I was going to refinish the sink. The cabinet was a custom cabinet size. We got new doors built. Okay. Like all wood, you know, all wood. It just needed to be painted. And the paint is still not right in that bathroom on the cabinets. It's peeling because we got the wrong kind. It needs to be sanded and redone. And the popcorn ceiling is still in both of those bathrooms. And I mean, this popcorn ceiling will probably take me 30 minutes to get it scraped. You know, I mean, it is just one of those projects that is so close to being done and it's not complete. So I actually just bought a Groupon for some painting. And I thought this painting company does some home projects as well.
Oh, cool.
So I figure they can do the ceilings
and
paint them and get those done. I'm like, I just need to bite the bullet and pay for this. And that's, again, asking for help and sometimes not being prideful in what you can do and just recognizing that in this busy season with little kids and work and everything else, you can't get it all done.
Exactly. And what was wrong with the paint for your cabinets? What kind of paint did you buy that it didn't work?
The wrong kind. I don't remember.
It's just coming off. Is it because it's in the bathroom and it has to be sealed or it's just the wrong kind
of paint? It's a half bath. We first used a chalk paint and waxed it. And it was, I don't know, my kids were too hard on it. I just think we shouldn't have used chalk paint in there,
right.
Mm-hmm. Even though I read online that I could. And so then I got another kind of paint and the guy said, be sure that you've gotten all the wax off.
Oh yeah.
Thought that we had. And I think because we hadn't, I don't know. It just peeled and it was just a disaster. Like we just need to sand it and have a professional come in and paint it and call it a day.
And then seal it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the things that, you know, I'm always tempted to do it. And then I'm like, I just don't know if this could go bad. And then you're going to spend more time doing it.
Exactly. And, you know, I have a blog called The Mom Creative. And so for the love, you would think I could paint a cabinet, but no, I cannot.
Yeah. There is certain, paint and ways to do it and sealing it, especially in bathrooms. So I totally know what you're saying. But well, we're almost at the end of the show and I wanted to touch base on this. I know you've been pretty open about it with your readers and stuff like that, your surgeries and stuff like that, because I feel like a lot of moms probably relate to what you went through and just don't really know anybody to like, you know, pick their brain and see how the recovery was and, you know, what made you decide to do it. But I know that a lot of women are having a lot of these symptoms. So would you just mind, you know, sharing with us your journey on your surgery that you just had not that long ago?
Yeah. So December 2nd, I had a breast reduction and an abdominal repair with abdominoplasty. So two major things going on there. Number one was that I had a very large chest, genetically given to me by my mother and her mother and her mother. So it was something that I always wanted to have done, but I wanted to nurse my children. And they say that roughly 50% of the women after they have had a breast reduction can nurse their babies. And so I didn't want to be in the 50 that couldn't. And I also had concern knowing my body type and my mom's body type that my breasts would just get larger after kids, which definitely was what happened to me. And so for that reason, I was glad that I waited. I also have struggled with chronic migraines and back pain and shoulder and neck pain from my breasts. And so all of those were very good reasons for me to have that surgery. And then I learned after having Ezra that I had a condition called diastasis recti. And what that is it is a splitting of the abdomen. It is very common. 70% of women who have had two or more children have some sort of split in their abdomen. Now, this is usually measured by finger width. So I had between a 3 and a 4 finger hole in my abdomen. Most women will have a much smaller tear, 1 to 2. It is nominal enough that it isn't going to make any significant impact on their bodies. There are exercises that can be done to try to bring that gap back together. I went through not plastic surgery. I went through seeing a specialist and doing exercises, trying to get that hole smaller, but ultimately the hole was just too big. Diastasis is corrected by having your abdomen sewn together, and that is done with a abdominoplasty with a tummy tuck. And I'm very petite. I'm 5 feet tall. My pregnancies, I gained between 50 and 60 pounds with each of my children. So I had a lot of extra skin. And so it felt like since we were going to be doing that surgery anyway, that I might as well get all that extra skin removed and get the full tummy tuck as well. So I did both of those surgeries at the same time. The breast reduction was covered by insurance. The abdominoplasty is considered cosmetic surgery, even with the diastasis. What I learned was that you can bill insurance for the diastasis repair, but because I was doing the cosmetic part at the same time, it actually would be more costly than if I just paid for the whole thing out of pocket. So that was the route that I did. And I think that that's probably different for different people and, you know, what their insurance offers and whatnot. But in my state and in my with my specific conditions, that's what was advised to me. So we paid for the abdominoplasty out of pocket and the breast reduction was covered, but I did it at the same time so that I would only be out of work for one period rather than doing two separate surgeries and, you know, only have one set of time to heal and do that at the same time. And I'm really glad that I did it. I did Facebook Lives all through my recovery that you can see on the Mom Creative Facebook page. It's just facebook.com/themomcreative. And I talked all through that. And I was on heavy narcotics when I did all those Facebook Lives. So I'm just going to share that as a caveat. I haven't been able to go back and watch them, but I'm definitely happy that I did it. The diastasis actually causes a lot of low back pain. I literally couldn't lean over the laundry basket and pull up the laundry without losing my breath. And so that was really hard. So I'm glad that I did it. I was just, the combination of the two was just constant pain for me. And it's made a huge difference in how I feel. It certainly has made a difference in how I look. And so that's a nice bonus, but certainly wasn't the reason why I did it. But I think that it's definitely something that women who maybe deal with these things should consider and that they shouldn't be afraid of it.
Sure. And did you notice, did you have the diastasis after your second, or was it the third that kind of really just pushed it over the edge?
So the diastasis, I probably had it to some degree with Adeline after my second. I realized in retrospect that that's what was going on. My plastic surgeon said that he will sometimes see this with women who have had two children, but usually it's the third child that really wreaks havoc on the stomach. So you have, as you can imagine, right? You have that small tear, then it starts to maybe heal a little bit, or it doesn't. And you just have this 1 or 2 inch and then bam, the third baby comes in there and just totally splits the abdomen. And I remember when I was pregnant with my son, Ezra, feeling this pain down the front of my stomach and a colleague saying to me, "I'll bet your abs have ripped." And I really think that that is probably what was going on, that it wasn't the baby kicking, that it was literally my abdomen ripping.
Wow. And so, okay. So for you, what you felt was lower back pain and just doing simple tasks was just not as easy. And like you said, you would be out of breath.
Right.
So that's like something to look for or whatever.
And you can look on YouTube. There are demonstration videos for how to diagnose diastasis in yourself. and you lay on the floor and you do this breathing thing and you can feel that hole. Okay. It isn't something that you have any scans for. I mean, you can literally feel it and stick your hand right in your stomach.
Okay. So. Now, do you have any suggestions for recovery from this kind of stuff, like that you wish you would have known, or you're glad that you, you know, did, or anything like that?
You know, and I want to apologize if you're getting any bangs. There's literally a window cleaner outside my office right now, like cleaning my window, hanging from, I wish you guys could see it. So I'm sorry for those couple bangs that may be happening.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. I know. Yes, I'm like, I don't know if something's like, falling or whatever.
I'm like, could you please, that window is clean enough, like move on. But he just keeps hanging there, keeps cleaning it. So sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay.
Anyway, regarding the recovery, you know, I think it's just being kind to yourself and knowing that it's going to take a long time. I was out of work for 5 weeks. It has been 3 months. I'm still wearing a brace 12 hours a day on my abdomen. The breast reduction was a breeze. And, you know, I think it was probably partly a breeze because the abdominal surgery is so significant. It is painful. I have a 21-inch scar going from hip to hip. I mean, it is a it's a big recovery. But I think being slow and knowing that you're going to need to take those pain meds and having help and letting things go, all those same types of things just are amplified with a big surgery like this.
Yeah. Now, is that scar above a C-section scar? Or is
it right around there? So you know, my C-section scar is completely removed. I don't have it anymore.
Yeah, because that's all gone. Yeah.
Right. All of that skin is gone. So, it's from, you know, the middle of my hip, and then goes, you know, down low at my pelvic bone and then around. So I would say it is comparable to where a C-section scar is. Okay. It's more than double the size of what my C-section scar was.
But the location and like below is probably near there. Gotcha.
Right. And I had a drain for 3 weeks that went out one hip. And that was not fun. And I couldn't wait to get that out, particularly toward the end. And I couldn't shower during that entire time with that drain.
That's hard.
I had lots and lots of those body wipes. And then I'd wash my hair in the sink.
Oh, my gosh.
But I didn't know you could go 3 weeks without showering. And I was surprised I didn't smell or anything. You know, I was putting deodorant on every day and I was washing with these pipes and it was fine.
Right, right.
And I think it probably helped that it was the winter, you know.
But, it wasn't.
I didn't leave my house for almost a month. So I was getting a bit antsy about all of that.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Well, as we wrap up, I know that your husband, Matthew, just wrote a beautiful children's book. Would you like to share with us what it's called and where people can find it?
Yeah, he just released a new book. I feel like we released it together. It was a family effort. Aww. Our family's been involved with it. It's called When God Made You, and it is a rhyming book about all of the hopes and dreams that God had when he thought about each one of us. It's just beautiful. The the illustrations were done by David Catro. And I think it's the kind of book that we all look for as parents that we want to read to our kids. I feel like it's a prayer that you read over your kids and it will prompt so much discussion. And my 2-year-old enjoys listening to it and my 8-year-old enjoys listening to it. And I don't know that I can say that about a whole lot of kids' picture books, but it's been phenomenal. I mean, it's been number one in all of its categories for 2 weeks. It was at its peak ranked at number 5 on all of Amazon. So it's just been phenomenal seeing thousands and thousands of families already impacted by it. So you can get it wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBook.com. At the end of March, it'll be available in Target nationwide. So really anywhere, Walmart.com. I think that it would be a great addition to any library, a great addition to any baby shower or new mom gift. What a precious thing. I was saying, I wish I would have had a book like this to have in the hospital when people came to see my kids that they could write a little note in. It's just a really special, special book. I think one that will really bless a lot of families.
Yeah. And so, and what is the title again?
It's called When God Made You. And my husband's name is Matthew Paul Turner. So it pops right up when you type it in on Amazon, When God Made You. And it's like $8 or $9. You can't beat it for a hardcover.
Awesome.
Color children's show.
Yeah. Well, so Jessica, where can people find you on social media and your blog?
Sure. My site is themomcreative.com, and you can access my blog there if you want information about bringing me in for speaking at an event. All my books are there. So that's a one-stop shop, themomcreative.com. On social media, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest at Jessica N. Turner. That N is for Nicole, Jessica N. Turner. And then on Facebook, you can find me at facebook.com/themomcreative.
Great. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I had so much fun talking with you.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And there you have it. If you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that. And the benefits of doing that is it automatically brings up every new episode every Tuesday. That way you don't have to go searching for any episodes that you might have missed. And you can do that easily by going to my website, mominspiredshow.com. And there is a tab at the top that says subscribe to podcast. You can also do it on your phone where you play your podcasts. You can hit the subscribe button quite easily. So you can do it either places. All right, you guys, I'll see you next week.